The first time I laid eyes on Irving Layton, he came bounding into my classroom, all athletic energy and rugged good looks, shriveled us with a withering stare, and before saying a single word, slowly, deliberately, turned his back on us and stood dead still. It was day one of the new school year, and we were fresh out of grade school in a new building, the one and only grade 7 class at Herzliya Junior High. The class consisted of a majority of young girls, most from middle class, ultra-Orthodox, bourgeois homes, clothed in tunics and woolen stockings or dresses with high collars and long sleeves down to the wrists. Being prepared, you could say being fattened for marriage, plus two tough guys from the working class immigrant side of town in and around St. Urban Street, Sydney, and me. Finally, in the hushed silence, Mr. Layton picked up a piece of chalk and began to scratch onto the blackboard 99.9999. He filled the front board with these huge figures top to bottom, and when he'd run out of room, continued on a board that ran down another wall on the right-hand side of the room 99.99999%, he said. And then he whipped around, fixed each of us with a stare, student by student, face by face, and repeated yet again, 99.9999999% of people are Philistines. And at one instant, exactly 3 minutes into my first year of higher education, not really knowing what that word Philistine meant, but sensing somehow that it meant something dreadful, I made myself a promise. Not me. Subsequently, I looked up the word and learned that Oxford's definition of a Philistine is someone whose interests are material and commonplace. But then it adds, the enemy into whose hands one may fall. That is close to what Irving conveyed to me in that one blinding, formative instant. A real anxiety lest I too fall to the boogeyman of bland and miss what he clearly regarded as the excitement in the juicy, messy, creative turmoil of real life. And there was no mystery either as to why Irving Layton's message to me was so instantly effective and subsequently memorable. It was because he was prepared not only to write poetry, but to be a poet, a prophet, a provocateur, a non-Philistine. The second time I saw Irving Layton, he ran into class a bit late, said he was just back from Toronto, where he had launched a book and been lionized, even by the CBC. And he advised us, if we were smart, to buy some of his leftover copies. We could have them for bargain rates, direct from him, the author, with no middlemen. And if we didn't have the cash, well, he would grant credit, provided that the 25 cents he was asking for was brought in the next day. And if we needed, we could tell our mums and dads that someday these books would be collector's items and worth a great deal of money. Since by that time I'd heard that Irving Layton was a modern poet who wrote lots of stuff with many forbidden words in it, I thought, what the hell? And so that day, music on a kazoo, or as we affectionately came to call it, music on a cat's ass, came into my possession for a quarter on the deferred payment plan. In the 4 years subsequent, until I graduated Herzliya, I bought other stuff from Mr. Layton. In the midst of my fever, the bull calf, the long pea shooter, the cold green element, the improved binoculars, the blue propeller, and so on. He pushed not only his own stuff, but books and little magazines full of people called Dudek and Suster and Acorn and Purdy and a little later a new guy called Cohen, Leonard. Nothing ever cost more than 50 cents, and some of the Samizdat stuff went for as little as 15 cents. And in total, I estimate that Mr. Layton, ruthlessly exploiting his position of power and glamour, dazzled and otherwise browbeat me, his captive student, into shelling out about $4 or $5 for early, contemporary post-war canlit, before it was even called canlit. Now, I want to address, and once and for all lay to rest this canard that poets in Canada are doomed to be eternally poor mendicants dependent on handouts. You know that cherished image of the artiste as a practical idiot. A few years ago, I was reading the story in Books in Canada which said, something strange is happening in the unpredictable world of rare books. First or early editions of works by some English-Canadian writers are suddenly hot commodities. So I thought, well, let's call Stephen Temple, a dealer, maybe the dealer in CanCom, and so I did, and I said, I've got this stuff at home. Will you come over and appraise my latent collection? Here's his letter to me, dated the 23rd of October, 1991. To whom it may concern, I've examined the attached list of books and periodicals by and concerning Irving Layton, and in my opinion, the fair market value of these items is $4,260. Sincerely, Stephen Temple. Now, I've been in lots of deals in my life, and you win some and you lose some. Certainly, I've had great good luck in television, but nothing comes close to the thousandfold appreciation I've had so far on Irving Layton's astute financial advice. And that valuation was almost 6 years ago. Those books and periodicals must be worth even more today. The conclusion to be drawn from this seems to me obvious. Kick out those poseurs in Ottawa and in the provinces who've got us untold billions in the hole. I say, Irving Layton for Minister of Finance. I say, Irving Layton for Minister of Love, which this country sorely needs at this time. Hell, I say, Irving Layton for Prime Minister.